You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast. Today's sponsor is Equestrian Plus. Aviva, how are you today?
I'm doing okay, Stephanie, but I want to hear about your last weekend because it sounds like it was pretty exciting and very successful.
It was a really good weekend. I got up to Gainesville to the Newberry Show. Carly Evans runs an amazing show. And it was also our Region 3 Adult Amateur Championships, which is cool because we're the only region that actually has an adult amateur championship. I think this is the third year that they did it. So it was great. Dante has not shown. I think we got one schooling show in this during season. And we've just simply not gotten a chance to show. And so This was the first time he's shown since last year. Okay. And we pulled off our fourth three. We did third three and fourth three both days. Okay. And he was a super good boy. I got
big change from last year when you had to leave the ring because of the noise, huh?
Yes. Yes, he was outstanding in the environment. That actually Sunday morning, I had an 8 a.m. ride in the indoor, and There was sunlight coming down the one rail. Like the sun was coming through. It was just at a certain angle, and There was sun shining on the rail. And he's like, I'm not digging that. And I was like, yeah, it's not going to eat you. Let's keep going. So I did have to put that into the first ride that day and kind of ride harder on that long side. But the great thing was when we came back at 2:30 in the afternoon, a long, long, long time later.
Well,
yeah, it was a long day. He didn't hold on to it. He did not hold on to it. So he didn't go, oh, this location was scary. He just went in. So I got a lot of big learning pieces. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. I got some big learning pieces. I know some things that I have to work on. I bought myself a new pretty show shirt. It was either going to be the, I feel bad for myself because I sucked. Here's my consolation prize. Or it was the, I won my class. Therefore I deserve a prize.
Okay. And you got your scores for your medal with distinction, and you can now ride a freestyle.
A freestyle, which I am now feverishly working on putting together because I'm going to try and hit another show, because why not show in the middle of summer in Florida? I'm going to try and hit another show July 4th weekend.
Wow. Good for you.
So,
what kind of music does Dante like?
Dante and I tend to go for disco stuff.
Okay.
Like happy upbeat music. And I'm looking at some 80s music for my canter work. And I'm actually using that Pharrell Williams song Happy for the trot work.
Oh.
It just makes me happy. And
me too.
Two, it's super great with his trot. So yeah.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
so we'll want to hear about that.
Yes. I realized how important corners were this weekend and why my freestyles got higher scores because you don't have to worry about riding the corner quite so much.
Yep.
So,
gee, I think I've heard that somewhere before. Corners being preparation. Yeah.
I
heard that though.
Talked to us about that before.
I think so.
Maybe we should go back and review some of our previous episodes.
Showing is hard. You know, that's the thing is that, you know, it's not just riding the horse, but you have to ride the movements and you have to be prepared to ride the horse and the movements in certain places. You know, there aren't do-overs in a test. So, yeah, it's a whole different ballgame. Yeah. So congratulations on
a
successful
weekend. Thank you. I didn't have any clients go. And so I had a lot of time to kind of work through things. Like Friday, I was in a total panic. My truck malfunctioned a little bit on the way up there, which gave me something else to focus on. And by the time I got to the showgrounds safely, I was no longer panicking about my weekend.
Good.
Yeah. And then having that late afternoon ride after a whole long day and then having to drive home, I really had to put my big girl show britches on and say, you know what? You're not leaving. You paid for this. Just because you got the score you needed for the weekend doesn't mean this isn't valuable. And it actually was my best score all weekend.
That's fabulous.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. And then while I had my trailer hooked up after coming home, I went and picked up one of my baby bulls. He was out on his, he has had a 6-month date with several lovely heifers down the street from me, and his job is done. So he came home for the summer to rest and recoup. And because all of my cows are terribly spoiled, I took my horse trailer and drove down the street and parked it in the guy's cow pasture. And I know he thought I was insane. But I shook a bucket of feed and my bull loaded up.
What a good boy.
As he was taught to do.
Yes.
And I shut the door and smiled at the man and drove home. And he saw my husband the other day and he's like, I've never seen anything like it. That doesn't happen. And my husband's like, it does in her world, but we know that's not reality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny. I'll never forget the first interview that we did with you. And you said in this tone of voice that was so adorable, we said, you know, what else do you do besides horses? And you said, I like cows. And I've never forgotten that. I like cows. So congratulations on your bull doing a good job and coming home and loading on the trailer like a good boy.
Yes. Yes, I get I get first pick of all of the babies. And there is one cow there that has white, she's black cow and she has white ankle socks and she has a white heart on her forehead. So I don't know if it's going to be a good cow, but if it has the same markings, it's coming home with me.
Oh, adorable. I love it. I love it.
So,
well, keep in touch with us. Yeah. Let us know about the freestyle and also about your baby.
Yes, absolutely. I will. And let's go back to some dressage based things. Okay. Our L question.
All right.
So the L question today is about the whip. And I think that, you know, the whip can be a whole interesting thing in itself, but the question is, should you change the whip when you change directions?
I see a lot of riders, particularly at the lower levels, who get very obsessed with their whips. I think this question is from Maddie, and it's a really good question because what I see a lot, particularly at the lower levels, is people being really obsessed with moving their whips. And they tend to do it on the diagonal, and not all of them know how to switch the whip effectively. And they do the, you know, pull the whip up through, and it's not only you're losing the reins, but you're waving the whip around and, you know, distracting the horse. So my rule of thumb is, and I will say this to riders after a test, I will say, I noticed that you kept switching the whip from side to side, but I noticed that you never actually used the whip. So, if you're not actually using the whip, does it matter which side it's on? These are the questions a rider needs to ask herself. If you do use the whip, do you use the whip more on one side than the other? Like, does your horse have a lazy right hind leg that you feel the need to give it a little tap? If you need the whip for your canter transitions, can you change the whip in a place that you can do it without interfering with connection? You know, I know how to correctly change my whip, but honestly, I don't think any of us do it particularly smoothly. And the only time that I ever change my whip from one hand to the other when I'm riding is at a walk because the connection is a little bit less important than at a trot or a canter at that point, especially if it's a free walk.
Okay.
And I only switch the whip if I feel like I need it. You know, I know with Tiger that I need the whip for his right hind leg because that's
okay.
I need it. However, there are times when I need it for his left shoulder because, yes, in fact, you can use the whip gently on the shoulder when you're riding. And sometimes I need it on his left hind leg. So when I'm schooling, I may move the whip. But when I go into a test, and of course, I don't show much anymore, or I don't show at all anymore, but when I used to, I kept the whip in my right hand because that was when I used it the most.
Okay. So it was on the hand that you needed the hind leg help the most.
Yes, exactly. And if you need the whip so much that you need to switch it, then absolutely switch it. But if you don't need the whip, but you carry it as a just in case, which is fine, lots of us do, then carry it in the just in case that you usually need it. You are not required to switch the whip. You are not required to carry the whip in the right hand or the left hand. You are not required
okay.
to keep the whip in the inside hand or the outside hand. I know a lot of people who come from the hunter world carry a jumping bat in their inside hand. So when they start riding dressage, they always keep the whip in their inside hand. I find that in dressage, more I need the engagement of the outside hind leg. So I need to carry the whip in my outside hand. So the answer to your question, Maddie, is no, you don't need to switch the whip when you change directions. And generally the judge would prefer that you not because it's distracting, but you may change the whip if you feel like you need to. So it's sort of like, you know, spurs. Do you need to wear spurs? Well, at the FEI levels, you used to need to have to wear spurs. You no longer do, I don't think.
Right.
But just because you wear spurs doesn't mean that you use them. So just
right.
carry a whip doesn't mean that you're actually going to use it. And if you are carrying a whip and you're just carrying it as a just in case, just carry it and forget that it's there unless you need it. But switching the whip is very distracting, especially if you do it, you know, the quote bad way, you know, the reach through and pull it up way versus the flip over.
Flipping it like a flag.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it is distracting for the judge. It's distracting for the horse. It changes the way that you're connected to the reins. And if you don't need to do it, don't. You know, this is one of those less is more. So don't switch the whip unless you need to.
Okay. Well, and then I'm also thinking, let's say that you carry the whip in your right hand because you know you're going to have to, that's the hind leg that you need to affect the most. If you're going to need it, you're going to need it there. When you come up and you halt, say it again.
Left hand.
But you... Okay. Or you could put it, take the whip with your left hand and your reins and salute with your right hand if you hand the whip over there, right?
You can. There are some old school judges who are offended by a salute with the left hand. There is no rule that says which hand you need to salute with. The rule is salute with the hand that doesn't have the whip. I see, again, lots of people who salute with their whip hand and salute with the whip in that hand, and their horses don't care.
Right.
But it's not as clean, and some horses do care. And if you get a little exuberant with your salute and you inadvertently tap your horse and your horse moves off, that's on you. And you know, now you've lost a score just because of that. So those are just the things to be thinking about you know, when you hit the show ring, you want to show off.
Right.
And you want to be as polished as you can be, and you want to be as non-distracting from your horse. You know, this is about your horse, not about you.
Right.
And you want to present your horse in a way that the judge forgets that you're there. So, and you want to practice things. So you should be practicing your tests before you compete and figuring out, oh, maybe I do actually need to switch the whip. So how is the best way that I can do it? And how can I do it so that it doesn't offend or affect my horse? Same thing with the salute. Mm-hmm. You should practice the halt and the salute so that it's not a brand new thing. You know, people ask me a lot, what do you think about all the new colors? And I say, I notice them, but they're irrelevant. If mm-hmm. what I pay attention to in the ring is the glitter on your helmet or the color of your jacket, you have a problem.
Right.
Because
you're searching for something.
Yeah. I want to be watching your horse. You mm-hmm. are sort of an incidental, and you know, your job is to go out there and present your horse. And that's what the whip does for you. If the whip is going to create a problem, either don't carry it, don't use it, or leave it where it is. But your job is to make life good for your horse and to present a pretty picture and a harmonious picture. I see okay. very few uses of the whip. I see very few people who actually use the whip.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like it's a security blanket.
Exactly. It's there in case you need it. You know, we like to think that you're in your warm up, you got your horse in front of the leg. In your warm up, you got your horse straight. In your warm up, you perfected those transitions so that, you know, the whip is there if you need it, the show ring. But hopefully by the time you hit the show ring, you know, it's 5 minutes. You're prepared.
Right.
So that's the long answer.
Okay.
And then, of course, at the FEI levels, you can't carry a whip. In the championships,
you can't carry a whip in a championship, even at training level.
That's right. In the USDF levels, you can't. Which was a really interesting thing for me when I was riding my horse Harley, who was a Percheron Hackney Cross and loved to get behind the leg.
Oof.
And going in to do second level with no whip. And you know, I have one test that I look like I'm sitting on a Thelwell pony, you know, and my little legs are going bang, 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 because he was not in front of my leg and I didn't have the whip to help me. So,
oh my God.
You know, the whip is an aid, but it isn't the only aid.
Yes. And then there was my championship class that I was riding in on my wonderful, wonderful Rocky horse. And I had the warm up of a lifetime and I was riding in for fourth level. And I was also riding a client's horse. So I literally had an hour between the horses and I rode in and I cantered in and I halted and I saluted and they
whistled,
rang the bell.
Yep.
Because I had my whip in my hand.
Yep. And what a horrible way to end a day.
Oh my gosh. And I had to go back out and get my proverbial poop together to go ride the client's horse in the same test. Oh. I will never, that is one of those things you will never, ever forget once you've done it.
No, I was at a horse show and somebody was stabled two over from me and she was riding fourth level for the first time. And she rode a fourth level test and she ended up with a score of like 72. I mean, it was just a beautiful, Oof. Brilliant test. And at the end of the test, the judge eliminated her because her horse was wearing boots.
Oh, no.
What? I mean, so tied in with all of this, just a little reminder to everybody, know the rules.
Yes.
Because there's no 100% riding the test of a lifetime and being eliminated at the end. Or not even being able to ride your test of a lifetime because you've done something so silly like
yes.
carried the whip in.
Yep.
So.
Well, that is an excellent segue to our guest for this month, Beth Haste of The Horse, of course, who gave both Aviva and I a ton of stuff to think about when it comes to fitting bits and the purpose behind different bits and what's helpful for your horse and what's not helpful for your horse. So much so that we are excited to probably bring her back a second time. So please take a listen to this month's guest. And if you have questions for her, know that we are planning on bringing her back. So send us your questions. We'll be thrilled to help you answer these. She is just an encyclopedia of knowledge about stuff like this. Yeah, so I can't wait to share that with you. But first, we're going to have a word from our sponsor. From short training tips to how-to videos and insider access to private clinics and lessons, learn from top dressage experts with Equestrian Plus. Watch exclusive interviews and lectures, slow motion demonstrations, and step-by-step tutorials taught by top-level pros, and explore cross-discipline topics such as groundwork, rider fitness, and stable management. Visit equestrianplus.com to sign up for a 7-day free trial with subscription. Thank you for joining us on the Dressage Today podcast. Our guest today is Beth Haste of The Horse, of course. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Stephanie.
And you got to meet Aviva via the internet earlier. So we're all three together today, and Beth is going to fill us in today as much as she can about bits. But we want to start out first with a little bit of background on you. Beth, give us a short version of how you got started in this whole world.
I rode as a child. I got transferred to Oklahoma in 1979. That's how old I am. And there weren't any mountains and there wasn't any ocean, but there were tons and tons of horses. And my eyes lit up because once you're a horsey person, you're a horsey person for life. So I started and got very involved. And then I found out about dressage with a friend of mine and got involved with the Dressage Society there. We ended up with a farm. We hosted 4 schooling shows a year at our farm. I was on the board of our Dressage Society for 12 years. Somebody came to me one time and said, "You need to open a tack shop." And I said, "No, I don't. I already have a full-time job." But she talked me into it, and it was probably the worst thing I ever did.
And yet still you do it.
Yeah, I know. It's I love my clients, and that's my problem, is I'm in love with my clients. But then as that went down the road and I met tons of people, I got introduced to a man named Ron Etherington in England who owned a foundry, who was an expert in bit manufacturing, and he also rode Grand Prix dressage.
Oh, wow.
And
cool.
That's who I learned about bits from. And his daughter was an advanced inventor, and she wrote a book called A Bit of Magic, The Art of Bitting from a Rider's Viewpoint. And she also was a bit engineer. So if you ever get a chance to lay your hands on that book, it's absolutely fantastic. So that's where I learned about bits from.
Interesting.
Wow.
So now, in addition to your tack store, you also help people with bit fitting.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I will go to the barn and I will fit bits. But to tell you the truth, most of it can be done via the internet. I don't actually have to be there. I need to ask tons of questions. And when my questions get answered, then I can figure out what the horse is currently in, what the size of bits, and what would probably help the horse to accept the bit better. Because basically, we're just looking for acceptance of a bit. There is no bit that's going to make your horse a Grand Prix horse next week.
You sure? Darn.
We're only looking for acceptance of the bit, and the rest of the job is you and your trainer.
Yep. So what's the first and most important thing that you need to talk to us about as far as bit fitting? Are there different levels of bits?
There is. Actually, most people, they're going to go take their first dressage lesson. What do? They run out to the tack shop and they go out and buy a loose ring snaffle. Worst thing that they could do. Because they equate a loose ring snaffle with dressage. And they see that because they see upper level riders riding him. If you're riding a horse in a loose ring snaffle, then you should be an educated rider at a college level versus a grammar school level. So all young horses and all beginner riders and really up to third level should be in a fixed cheek bit, not a loose ring.
Give us an example of what a fixed cheek bit would be.
The most perfect bit would be an egg butt.
Okay.
And an egg butt or a fixed cheek bit like a D-ring or an egg butt or a full cheek, they're quiet bits. When you have a loose ring, every movement of your hand vibrates down to the horse's mouth. So you actually want to have pretty educated hands to be able to handle a loose ring.
Hmm. Interesting. How about something like a Bochet?
Well, a Bochet is a great bit. It was created by one of the masters of dressage. But the problem is that you cannot find a Bochet manufactured today that's made correctly. And that's an unfortunate situation because the Bochet, actually the action of a Bochet, is to lower the horse's poll and to stretch more over the top line and back to the hand. So for horses that carry themselves artificially high, you know, you see a lot of Morgans and Arabs and whatever, and that actually helps to lower the pole and to get the horse to stretch more over the top line. So it's a fabulous bit, except there isn't one that's manufactured correctly anymore. So they only work just like a fixed cheek snaffle.
Okay. And when you say they're not manufactured correctly anymore, is it the shape of the bit that they're not doing well, or
no? It's where the mouthpiece comes into the cheek piece. If you look at the Bochet, you've got a round cheek piece with a little stem,
right?
And the mouth, if you cut that little round cheek piece in half, the mouthpiece should come at the upper part of the circle. And when you look at all the Bochets today, that mouthpiece comes in the middle.
Okay.
And so then you don't get the – and there's another thing. There is nothing that is harsh about a Bochet. A Bochet is nothing but a nuance. It is a nuance to get the horse to stretch more over the top line and lower the pole a bit. And it has it is not a strong bit. It is not a powerful bit. So it's really a super bit. It's just unfortunate that we've lost the original design that the master designed.
That's so interesting. I just got on my computer and I Googled, and they are absolutely in the middle or towards the bottom. You're right.
Absolutely.
Every single one of them.
Yeah.
And people believe that the Bochet is a leverage bit, which it is not then.
Which it is definitely not.
Okay.
It's just got a nuance of encouragement.
Interesting.
That's a shame that we don't have access to a bit like that.
It really is. I know that at the factory that I went to in England, one of the reasons why they closed down is that all their castings for the bits were done by these really old guys, and they were all done in wax. And someone broke in and vandalized the place and broke their old castings.
Oh, wow.
Which had the original French link and the original Bochet and it was lost. And then we had people manufacturing bits that have no idea about a bit. And so they'd send them off to the Far East, and whatever they got back, they got back. And they had no idea whether it was correct or not correct. Because nobody knew what correct was.
So when we talk about beginner, let's for lack of a better word, beginner bits versus more advanced bits,
right,
and we're talking about a fixed cheek versus a loose ring, how right. about things like single jointed versus double jointed, the lozenges versus flat pieces, angled bits, all of those okay. kinds of things? How do those yeah. factor in as well?
Let's start with, you break a bit down into two pieces.
Okay.
You have the cheek piece, and then you have the mouth piece.
Okay.
So first, when you go to buy a bit, you decide what cheek piece you need. So if you're under third level, you would probably be looking, especially for dressage, an egg boat is really a very nice bit. And you can use an egg butt as a snaffle, whether it's got a small ring for a bradoon or mm-hmm. it's got a snaffle ring, which could be 65 or 70 centimeters. And a bradoon is typically 55.
Okay.
It doesn't make any difference. Both are legal. And what you want to do is pick the cheek piece. Then, after you've decided on what cheek piece, you can think about the mouthpiece. A two-piece bit is going to be a little bit stronger only because of physics and the distance from the middle of the ring to the edge of the ring is longer than if you break it up into three pieces.
Right.
So if you have a three-piece, it's going to be softer than a two-piece.
Okay.
That makes sense.
If a horse has had a bit that's too big in his mouth, he'll probably be less aggravated if it's a two-piece. Because when it's sliding back and forth at his mouth, at least he's not getting or she's not getting the extra joint going across the bars as it's moving. So sometimes they can appear to not like something that's softer. And it might be because the bit's not correctly sized for the horse.
Okay.
Okay. I never thought about that. What about lozenges? The little beans and all of the different shapes of the beans.
The classic three-piece bit was the original French link bit.
Okay.
The original French link bit was the middle piece was quite small. And the holes, there were two holes in it for it to attach the bars. And those actually took up the whole size of that little piece. And then the bars attached to that. So it wasn't very big. And it also had a tremendous amount of freedom of movement. And what we want in a three-piece is a lot of freedom of movement. And what made the three-piece French link so wonderful was that the horse owned the centerpiece, and they could place it on their tongue because of the movability of the bit, any place that was comfortable for them. And no matter how much pressure was placed on the bit on either side, the horse still owned that centerpiece and could move it around on the tongue. That's what made the French link a classic, beautiful, soft, inviting bit for the horse. And the lozenge bits were created as an offshoot to that original bit.
Why was it determined that if this little flat piece is good, making it thicker might be better?
Well, you know, there's a big business in bits. And so if you come up with something that's different and you tell people, well, it does this, this, and this, then people might run out and buy it. So I think a lot of it was marketing. The problem came in is when the bit was limited in its movement. So there were new bits created that were three-piece that actually did lock.
Yes, I've heard of those. I haven't used them.
No. And then there were ones that didn't have big enough holes in the link, so they actually kind of could even pinch because they didn't freely move in the horse's mouth. So we always wanted one. There was another bit that came out, and if you think about how the bit attaches to the center link, there was one bit, three-piece, that came out that put zero pressure on the horse's tongue. And that was created by one company. And then there was another big company that had a three-piece, but the joint, the way it sat, sat into the tongue. And the one that didn't put pressure on the tongue outsold the other one, even though they were a smaller company. So they changed the mouthpiece of the bit, the bigger company, and it's known as the Ultra Mouth now, and we all know what it is. Mm-hmm. And they moved, they changed the way the bit sat into the tongue and put it in as an angle so wouldn't the joints wouldn't directly sit onto the tongue and put extra pressure. And then they, of course, did a great marketing job, and everybody who rode dressage had one.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some of these centerpieces, I don't know if you'd still call it a lozenge, that like they're actually, they look like a bean on the top, but they're hollow on the underside. Is that correct as well?
I think I know what you're talking about, but if you play with those bits, you'll notice that the bit doesn't really have total freedom of movement.
It somewhat locks?
Yes. It doesn't actually lock, but it gets stiff. And that's not what we're really looking for in a really soft bit.
Okay.
And we want the bit to have a little bit of a shape. So it's the whole bit itself is just slightly a little rounded to take the shape of the horse's mouth.
Okay.
But we don't want bits. I mean, the whole idea of a three-piece bit was from the original French link, which was a perfect bit. And so everything off of that should then be completely loose and free so the horse still owns that centerpiece of the bit.
And the French link as we have it now is no longer a legal bit.
Yes. And the reason for that is because there's not one for sale that resembles the original French link that was designed by one of the masters. Again, that was lost. So now we have all different shapes of French link. You wouldn't know one from another. And I think the bit committee finally decided we don't know what's a French link and what's not. So let's make it illegal.
Interesting.
Some of them look like Dr. Bristol's.
Yeah.
I mean, they were so, some of them look like this oblong dog bones.
I've heard of that, yes.
Rhyme or reason to what an original French link looked like.
Well, there's so many things that are out there now. I mean, there are these ones that have a lozenge in the middle, but they also have a spinning thing in the middle of the lozenge.
Yeah, well, that was thought to, if a horse had a busy mouth, if we give him something to make it busier. I don't know. It was a thought process at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't think we sell too many of those anymore. Well, I don't sell an awful lot of different bits. I sell very classical bits. So I just find that a classical bit works better. And I have a philosophy when I bid a horse. And my philosophy is to go as soft as possible and to invite the horse to the party.
Oh, that's lovely. When you think about that, do you also think about the different kinds of metals or plastics or rubbers? Do those matter?
I do, because I think that one of the reasons that we sold and people bought an awful lot of copper-based bits. Mm-hmm. There was a reason for that. And if they're 70% copper or better, they warm to the temperature of a horse's mouth. Okay. And if they warm to the temperature of a horse's mouth, they become more neutral. If you hold like a Springer bit mm-hmm. or a Neue Schule bit in your hand, it'll warm up to the temperature of your hand.
And but you're saying like a stainless steel bit might not?
A stainless steel always remains cold.
Okay. Interesting.
And it never warms up. So, and also when you buy a bit that's 70, you're paying for that copper. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But there's also the only two companies that I'm aware of that have 70% copper or better are very good bit manufacturers that their bits are consistent every single time. You're getting the same exact bit. And they have, you know, they have quality control. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sell a bit that I have to be concerned about, well, this time from the factory it came this way and that came from sure. the factory another way. I want the bit to be consistent.
And do you find that the weight makes a difference? I mean, I had, you know, growing up in dressage, I was told, you know, thoroughbred's like a light bit, warm blood's like a heavy bit.
That is one of the most important questions we could ask, because weight is an aid in the bit. Mm-hmm. And it's an aid in the bit because there are two positions in the horse's mouth for a bit. There is an on position and there is an off position. And when you have the bit just hanging on the bridle in the horse's mouth, it's in the off position. When you pick up the reins, the bit moves up into the horse's mouth, and then it goes into the on position. And if when we're riding and we want the horse to stretch more over the top, maybe you're doing a stretchy circle or whatever, and you start letting the bit out a little bit, that bit should then start moving down so it gives the horse the indication to follow the weight to the ground. We've all heard that in dressage. Well, you can't have that happen unless the bit has enough weight to move from the on position to the off position. And when you finish riding and you want that horse to really stretch his out and do a nice big trot and loosen his back up, you let the reins out and he follows that bit and just really moves out and stretches his back out. Well, that's because it's moving toward the off position.
So you wouldn't even look at those lightweight bits, those sort of hollow bits.
Well, hollow mouth bits were only made because after World War II, there was a shortage of metal.
There's always a reason, isn't there?
There's always a reason. And they made these horrible bits because there wasn't enough metal to make them solid.
Okay.
And they're really terrible. But at the time, that's what we had.
Yeah.
And that's what they used. And the Germans did that because they knew they wanted a bit that was nice and comfortable in the horse's mouth, but they didn't have the metal to make it a solid, heavy bit like it used to be.
Right. So then taking the next step is, how do you determine how thick the mouthpieces for individual horses? I guess that's that whole shape of the mouth and the size of the tongue. And
well, as we've had horses evolve, their mouths have evolved. And I mean, I can look in one horse after I go into a barn and I maybe am looking at 15 horses. Mm-hmm. Very few horses have a different shape in their mouth. Most of them today have a fat tongue. They have narrow jaw bones. And how you know that, too, is you put your two fingers on either side of the two bones at the underside of the jaw. Mm-hmm. That is actually the bars that the bit sits on. And most of them are probably no wider than, I have a measuring tape here. Let me measure my fingers. No more than about 2 inches wide. And you could go right down the all the horses in the barn and just feel their jawbones underneath and feel how nice and narrow they are. So you have this narrow jawbone and a big fat tongue, and then your palates are mostly all flat today.
Oh.
Years ago, you'd see a thoroughbred and he'd have some depth to the palate. Not anymore. They're almost all flat, big fat tongue, and when the horse closes his mouth, the tongue is oozing out between the teeth. So there's no room in there.
Yeah.
They bred these horses where they have little, I don't care if they're 18 hands, inside the capsule of the mouth is very small.
So the old theory that a fatter bit is a softer bit wouldn't necessarily apply nowadays, because you're actually putting too much bit in the horse's mouth and they can't necessarily close their mouth.
Okay, now I want you to hold on to that thought, because that is a very interesting thing. You're absolutely correct. We do not want to put bits that are so big that the horse can't close his mouth. So where years ago, and you have to also remember, dressage also came from the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who was riding these horses?
Men.
With very long backs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And quite powerful. And now when you look around the dressage arena, I'm always happy to see men there, but there's an awful lot of women riding. They mm-hmm. don't have that kind of back. They're never going to have that kind of strength. They actually have to invite the horse to the party. Okay.
Mm.
So we want to have something that fits in their mouth, that's comfortable, that they close their mouth. We want a material that's acceptable. And we want it to fit correctly. So, and we want it, we really do want it soft. And I find that even in horses who are giving you problems, and your indication is maybe we should go stronger, your indication is we should go softer.
Typical dressage. Mm-hmm. If you think it should be strong, it should be soft.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
So you always want to go softer because you want to invite the horse back to the party. So, okay. So we talked about fat. So today I would say the average snaffle is probably 14 or 16 millimeters around.
Okay.
Where years ago it would have been 18 and 20.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But their mouths have evolved, and most of the Berdoons are going to be 12 or 14.
Okay.
And that's going to fit into a horse's mouth a lot better. But let's go back to your great question. But isn't a fat bit a lot softer because we got a bigger surface? The answer is yes, but not if they're going to gag over it. But guess what? There is a bit company that actually thought about it. And they said, how can we have a fat bit with a bigger bearing surface, but not make it so the horse can't close its mouth? So when you think about what the horse has in the way of space, mm-hmm. he has more, or she has more space from front to back than from top to bottom. And what Springer did is they made a new bit, and it's called the Novo Contact.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a fat bit and they squished it. So now it's got a bigger bearing surface, but the horse can close its mouth. It's a great bit, and they offer it in a loose ring, a two-piece, a three-piece, a Berdoon, an egg butt. It's amazing.
Interesting.
Yes, and especially if you have a horse that has damage to a bar,
mm-hmm.
and or has real sensitivity to his bars, that's a really good choice.
Wow. Okay.
So I want to make life even more difficult. Now I want to ask you about mullein bits.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Mullein bits. There's different shapes. And you can also look at it, you see it almost better in a curb bit. A mullein actually has an arch to it that arches forward.
Okay.
There is a Moore's lot that looks like a mullein, but it arches over the tongue.
So it goes up into the roof of the mouth.
Well, no, because it's following the shape of the tongue.
Okay.
So it arches just slightly over the tongue.
Okay.
And the mullen, remember, arches forward. So if you get a mental picture of this bit that arches forward, if you activate the bit, where is that bit going to go? It's going to put more pressure forward and down on the tongue. Where a Moore's lot, which is an absolute classic French, softest curb bit you can put in your mouth, arches just slightly over. And it has no break in the mouthpiece like a mullen. Only now when you activate it, it just rolls on the tongue and it spreads the pressure evenly across the tongue and the bars.
I've never even heard of that bit.
It is one of the absolute classic dressage bits. It predates Jesus Christ. It's so old, and it is amazing, and it's still absolutely a wonderful bit. Now, in a double, that's what you'd be looking for. But there's also somebody took that and actually even made it better. And they took that slight arch, and it is slight, and I'll give you a reason for that in a minute. And they angled it now 45 degrees back into the horse's mouth. So if you get a mental picture of this when you activate the bit, that slight arch now gives a release to the tongue and makes the Moore's lot even slightly better. And that's called a transform. And that's my number one go-to softest curb bit under the face of the earth.
Spell the Moore's lot, because I'm not even finding that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How do you, what is it?
M-O-R-S, and it's
M-O-R-S.
L-L-H-O-T-T-E. I've got to remember the spell French now. M-O-R-S, next word, L-H-O-T-T-E.
Yes. Yes, I'm seeing it.
And you know, the French always like self-carriage and very soft and very light bits, which is where we get the French link.
And I know we're not going to talk about doubles, but it's interesting that this bit that you're talking about now has almost no port to it. It's just the angle.
Right. So let's talk now about, just quickly, because there's a follow-up to this. So what happens is when you make the arch deeper, the bit changes completely, and then it comes down and hits the bars first.
Okay.
So that's why it's not as soft as the Moore's lot or the transform.
Okay.
And a lot of people look at a Moore's lot and call it a mullen
because it's one piece.
The mullen is one piece, but it arches forward and not over.
Okay.
And it has an entirely different action in the mouth.
Interesting. I did not know about the difference. Now, I know you can use a mullen mouth as a, quote, snaffle, even though it's not actually as a single bit. Can you use the other one that way also?
Doesn't really work very well. You could, I guess, but I haven't seen one. It's more like in the doubles.
Okay.
And a mullen, let's look at also, too. One of the reasons that a three-piece is so good for the horse is because it's got all this loosey-goosey thing going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once you put a solid bit into the horse's mouth, which is why I'm not crazy about bits that lock up, because it encourages the horse to lean. And so we want a little bit of self-carriage and we want the horse to accept the bit. But unless you've got a horse who's maybe you're rehabbing because the horse doesn't go near the bit, you might use it as an interim bit to help him to go more to the contact.
Because it's
solid.
So
that brings me to another question. Yes. So some people swap out bits on a relatively regular basis with their horses, and others stick with the one bit forever and ever. What do you think about that?
Usually when I put bits in a horse's mouth, they need to stay there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've gone and tried to figure out, of course the horse has an opinion, but we tried to figure out what is going to be best for that horse. Now, if you're, as a trainer, it's a little different than your regular owner amateur, but a trainer might use a bit not intermittently, but rehabbing-wise. And then go to, you're always should be, I think, heading toward a really soft bit. But there is self-preservation. And there are bits that actually might help a horse to get an idea of what we're looking for. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Sure.
So when we're thinking about that, there's a bit that Noya Shula makes, and it's called, oh dear,
yeah.
That bit is really good for horses who are very heavy to the contact. And they're heavy to the contact, as you both know, because you're both adequate in dressage and trainers and judges, and it's because the horse is on the forehand. So the horse has not gotten strong enough behind to lighten himself up in the front. But sometimes if you put like something, if you have a horse in for training and you put him in a verbinden, it might give him the idea to lighten up a little bit in the front, but we still need to come in from behind.
Right.
So, but it might give them the idea. So to me, that's an interim bit.
Okay.
That we would only use this for a short period of time.
Okay.
And so I think that it has its purpose.
But it is a purpose fulfilled. It is a purpose to be fulfilled and then moved on from.
Yeah. To an even softer bit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the way I think about bits.
I like that.
So let's talk about the length of the bit and how it needs to hang in the mouth. You know, we always talked about the two wrinkles.
That to me, you got to play with.
Okay.
And you got to find that place, that sweet spot in the horse's mouth, especially, you know, when you're doing doubles.
Yeah.
You have the same issue. You know, but let's talk about the width of the bit. We do not want a bit pulling through and sticking out the side of the horse's mouth. Fixed cheek bits are sized entirely different than loose ring bits. We want to have a fixed cheek bit not pull through at all. We want it to stabilize in the horse's mouth. The average size of a fixed cheek bit in the average horse today is 4 3/4 inches. That's in a 17-2 hand warm blood.
Wow.
That's way smaller than I would have expected.
Yeah, really smaller than I would have expected.
But the difference is night and day.
Interesting.
But that's for a fixed ring.
That's only for the fixed ring.
Okay.
Because you do not want, because the fixed ring has taken any pinching and moved it away from the corners. So you don't have to worry about pinching the corners of the mouth. And remember what we said earlier about how narrow the bars are?
Mm-hmm.
And how small that capsule really is inside? Mm-hmm. So
yes.
We actually put a bit in there that's smaller and it's not traveling back and forth across the bars. The bit is going to actually be able to be used correctly. And those breaks in the mouthpiece aren't going back and forth and where they're not supposed to be. Also, if you think about the beginner or the person who doesn't have as much experience or good hands, if they have pressure on one side of the bit more than the other, it's not pulling through the horse's mouth.
Right.
The other thing is that we didn't talk about is how absolutely quiet a fixed cheek bit is. So if you want to be a genius as a trainer and you have somebody come in for a lesson and they're under third level and they're not, don't have wonderful hands, and you have this little 4 3/4 inch egg butt sitting next to you in a really soft three piece, and you get halfway through the lesson and you go and change that bit out, I guarantee you that they will think you're a genius, because the horse is going to go, oh, thank God. And he's going to settle into the contact.
That and is just crazy to me.
Then going to get something toward round.
So I'm going to run out and I'm going to buy myself.
I know a couple of big time judges who teach with one of those sitting on the bench.
Wow.
That makes sense. I mean, that's how we communicate with one of the main ways we communicate with our horses, right?
Right.
Is through the bit, is through the bridle. Right. And if you have somebody with uneducated hands or hard hands or pulling hands, what are they saying to the horse?
Exactly.
The horse, so if you can make it so that their hands can't be as loud.
Exactly. They're going to at least try.
Yeah.
To do what the person is asking them, even
makes
though
perfect sense.
The person has a hard time asking.
Yep.
So then you become a genius. Okay. Now, I haven't come across...
We're going to cut this out of this so that Stephanie and I can do this and be geniuses and nobody will know, okay?
Perfect. So the other thing is that I haven't found any horses in a fixed cheek that take bigger than a 5.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember, Jim Coford rode a Dutch harness cross...
Adaya.
Big, not yes. Adaya.
I'm not, but, okay.
But one, a Rhett.
Oh, Rhett, yeah.
Oh,
big,
yeah.
Bay horse. Well, he was over 18 hands. He took a 5-inch fixed cheek.
Okay. Wow.
So I have a question that relates to my horse. So the bit that I ride him in is a loose ring. And every time I look at it, I say it's too big for him. And so I bought him the exact same bit, smaller, and he hated it. And he made it very clear that he liked that extra room.
Yeah, but you probably have hands that are even.
Let's hope so.
Well, that's what I'm kind of thinking. So you have to be careful, and you shouldn't look at a loose ring bit or any bit, snaffle bit, just hanging on the bridle. You have to pick up the reins and move it into the on position, because it's a little narrower at the on position.
Okay.
So you always want to look at it on contact.
Okay.
And what you want is on both sides of the loose ring that the horse's mouth is just inside the ring, the hole that the ring goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want a lot of extra room. So we want to be, when it's on contact, just inside the hole that the ring goes through.
Okay.
Most horses today take between a 5 1/4 and a 5 1/2 in a loose ring bit.
Okay.
There's like the occasional odd horse has a lot of lips and maybe an extra flap or whatever that maybe might be into a 5 3/4. But the average horse is a 5 1/4 to a 5 1/2. And when I'm talking average to you, I'm talking 16.1 to 17.2.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we all deal with, you know. But then you take the quarter horse, and the quarter horse ends up in a 5 or a 5 1/4 at a loose ring.
Because their heads are thicker, or?
Yeah, you'll find their bars a little bit wider.
Wider.
Okay.
But to be honest, the warm bloods are like cookie cutters. And they're all like the same. It's amazing. And also, when you pair up a fixed cheek bit with a curb should be the same size.
Oh.
And when you link a curb up with a loose ring, the loose ring can be anywhere from 3/4 to a 1/2 inch bigger.
Right.
Than the curb.
So when we're talking about stability, one of the things that people do to stabilize the bit, and we're not talking about rider hands here, are things like flashes or figure eights or the Mechlin bridles. Do you see that as helping the horse be invited to the dance, or is that totally different or cheating?
I think the flash is not a stability thing. I think the flash is to help keep the horse's mouth closed and to make sure that the horse is keeping his mouth closed over the bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if most of the time, if the horse is happy in the contact and whatever, I don't know if the flash is absolutely needed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people felt that way about a crank cavesson versus a Swedish cavesson.
Right.
And I prefer, I hate the word crank.
Yeah, it's awful.
Mm.
I hate the word. It's terrible. But that whole noseband fits way better and is more adjustable.
I like that noseband better for that same reason. Mine's very loose, but yes, you've got more room to go.
I want to pad those jawbones. And I want to get that padding directly in the middle.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't want the little pinching on the side when those two straight pieces come together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's got a bad rap. And people are still saying, oh, I don't want my horse in a crank. I think it's a very comfortable noseband for a horse if it's applied correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should be so tight that you have to put your feet against the wall.
Oh, God, no.
You know, I think it just needs to be comfortable for the horse.
Yeah.
And I think if you're getting the right help, which is always helpful, and you're in the correct bit for the what the horse needs and wants, you know, you got part of the problem, and now you have to figure out what forward is.
Pardon? One of the things that I see when I'm judging with not a lot, but a significant number of off-the-track thoroughbreds is the tongue, you know, doing the flap, coming out the side, and,
well,
you know.
I see that in Warmbloods as well.
Interestingly, I've only seen it so far in the thoroughbreds.
I've seen it plenty in Warmbloods, and it's usually because, I mean, they exhibit through their mouth. So if they're unhappy, they exhibit through their mouth. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bit situation, but they exhibit that way. I had a horse who hated his blanket so badly that when I would walk into the stall with it, he would go to the corner and snap his teeth at me. So I had to find a blanket that actually fit him correctly, and once I did that, he stopped snapping his teeth at me.
Mm-hmm.
They only have certain ways to speak to us. And there's a very, very good article that I put out once a year on Facebook on how to help a tongue issue.
Okay.
And it was matter of fact, it was from Dressage Today magazine, and it was from somebody, I think they were in Holland. And she described it because it's a very, very difficult thing to correct once it happens.
Yeah.
Because the horse figures it could have a very active tongue. He's very mouthy. He just likes to exhibit. And he's unhappy. And he's telling you he's unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be because the horse has maybe been overfaced.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he had bad equipment. There could be quite a few things that could have, and he's been trying to say I'm unhappy and nobody was listening. But if you don't correct that in the beginning and it becomes a habit, then the horse isn't worth very much.
Yeah. I see
really
some
unfortunate.
Yeah, I see some, you know, the ears are forward, the back is soft, the tail is flying, you know, floating, and there doesn't seem to be anything unhappy. And then they'll come around, see, and I see this tongue just kind of flapping in the breeze.
Well, if you were on the track and you were 18 months old.
Yeah.
And somebody tied your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were doing all kinds of things that an 18-month-old shouldn't be doing.
Right. You stick your tongue out too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In a situation like that, would that be a place where you might think about if somebody was restarting a thoroughbred, maybe using a bitless bridle for a little bit to help them get a different impression?
I would do anything that I could possibly do. And I probably would try the bitless.
Mm-hmm.
I might even try, and I'm not a big advocate of plastic bits, but the Nath bit is super soft, and I find that can be helpful in retraining. But basically, you're going to have to work with somebody on the ground, because the minute that horse's tongue starts to come out, you've got to do something else.
Yeah.
You've got to keep it in his mouth. That's where this article came in, which was fantastic. But it's going to take really working on it to keep them soft and supple in the mouth without having to stick the tongue out. Yeah. And that's probably going to take two people, one on the ground and one riding.
Okay.
And you're going to have to change it up and be so cognizant of it. But if you could get it to stay in the mouth, once you get them going, and that you might be able to correct that. That's why I put that article out once a year. It was a fantastic article, and it was in Dressage Today magazine.
Okay.
And it's how somebody actually worked to correct that. And it's really difficult once it's been established. But a lot of times it's how they're communicating to us, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the bit. Now, anybody who has a horse that sticks a tongue out comes to me for a bit problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really a bit problem. Is that helpful?
How about getting the tongue over the bit?
Well, we're also dealing with the same type of situation. It may not be the bit. But it may be. You want something super soft in there.
Yeah.
That mouth exhibits. It exhibits when it's unhappy. And so you've, I had done bits for a mother and the daughter, and when I was in Wellington over the winter one year, and I did them both, and the horses were going great. Everything was fine. July comes, and the mother calls me, and she goes, "We need to change the bits." And once I bid horses, we really don't need to change the bit. So I said, "What seems to be the problem?" Mm-hmm. So the horse was exhibiting through the mouth. And I said, "I doubt that it's the bits. So you're going to need to check the equipment, the other equipment. And you're going to make sure that the horse is actually able to go forward soundly. So there's nothing in the back, nothing in the hind end, whatever." So this was a veterinarian too. So I gave her a down and dirty how to check a saddle. And I was married to a master saddler, so I did learn a couple of little things. So I told her how to check it to make sure that the thing was not doing what it shouldn't do. And she called me back and she said, okay, it's a saddle.
Interesting.
But they exhibit through the mouth. Once you get them sorted and they accept the contact, the rest of it's training, equipment, making sure the horse is comfortable.
Another country heard from.
Yes.
And the
dog thinking, says, "Yeah, I express myself by barking."
That's right. I am thinking that this is a good place for us to stop with this portion of our time with you.
Don't you see how we can go on?
Yes.
I do. And I think it would be great to be able to talk to people another time about the whole process with the doubles. But this has given us
to come back.
Yes, this has given us a lot of food for thought. I am thinking that I'm going to have to go check the size of all my bits now. So
I'm thinking I might be wanting to go buy myself an egg butt.
4 3/4 3-piece apple.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking.
I have to tell you, my favorite bit, they don't make in a snaffle in a 4 3/4. And I do not know why. It makes me crazy. So I put everybody in a Berdoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my favorite is a trans-angled egg butt Berdoon. I can't keep them in stock. They run out the door. They're like the most perfect bit. And I have to tell you, they are a mare. We didn't even cover this. They are a mare bit and a stallion bit.
Mm.
Because they're quiet and stallions are mouthy and mares are opinionated. And the mare wants to be invited to the party. You are not going to say you will come to the party.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's bookmark that, and I think we can talk about that next time as well. Beth, this has been so fascinating.
Really good.
Really good. Just really educational. And I love the historic knowledge that you bring to this, stuff I'd never even heard of. So thank you so much.
Well, it's what makes me a little crazy when somebody runs a horse around in a circle, keep changing the bits every 15 minutes to see if they can find the bit the horse loves. That is never, ever going to work. Because you got to know why. I ask so many questions when people come to me and they want a bit. And I ask them tons of questions because at the end, I'm going to try to find the bit that I think the horse is looking for. Right. And it's not just by luck. It's how it's designed. It's how what the horse needs, how the horse is going to the contact. So there's a lot of choice that goes into this. It's an educated choice.
Yes, 100%. All right. So. Well, we will be back with Beth another time.
Thanks for having me.